Right now, it is time for us to check sports. It's time to bring in Mike Causey. Morning there, Mike.
Good morning.
You know, I woke up this morning and I saw your text, and the text that got to me was the death of Tom Seaver at the age of 75. I can still remember when the Mets were playing the Cubs and the Mets were finally becoming a good baseball team. And the excitement that Tom Seaver brought back into New York City. And at that time, the Mets owned the city. It wasn't the Yankees. It wasn't any of the football teams. It wasn't the basketball teams or hockey teams. It was the Mets. Tom Seaver meant that much to that franchise.
I saw him pitch as a rookie in 1967. It was one game of a doubleheader. He was, at that point, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball.
You know, he was a bit of an ornery guy off the field, but like I said, what he brought.
He was a what?
Ornery guy.
Oh, not really. I mean, he didn't like the media asking stupid questions. There's nothing wrong with that.
But what he did, he really brought the Mets. I mean, the Mets had other players that were important as well. But when you think,
no more than him. He was the most important player in the team.
And will remain so until somebody else can come along and top what he did, because he really he turned them from a laughingstock into a recognized baseball team. It was something to watch back then.
It's a different game. I mean, Tom Seaver, as soon as he came out of USC and pitched for the Mets, he was pitching complete games.
Yeah.
You have a pitcher of his caliber with the Mets now in DeGrom, but the game's changed and he's not allowed to do it. He could be that kind of a dominating pitcher. But Tom Seaver did it from when he came out of college until I think he was 42 years old or something. You know, DeGrom's not going to do that. He's one of the best pitchers of all time. The Mets had him. The Mets traded him. And he still continued to win. He pitched a no-hitter. The only one he ever pitched was for the Reds. And he got his 300th win for the White Sox against the Yankees.
Amazing career, really.
Yeah. But I just heard something on television that really upset me. Now, Tom Seaver had dementia. He's been failing for years.
Yes, he has been failing, absolutely. And everybody, and it's been reported. He had dementia that was bordering on Alzheimer's disease, okay?
Yeah. Now they're saying it was dementia / COVID. I mean, when does this stop? Really, when does this stop? The guy was in isolation in his house for over a year. When does this stop? This is pathetic that they're even reporting this that way.
Well, anyway,
absolute joke.
What should be reported is the man was an unbelievable pitcher. His accomplishments on the Mets and in New York City were simply amazing, and that's why one of the reasons the Mets were called the Amazons. And to single-handedly put a franchise on your back and change its destiny doesn't happen very often in any sport.
But I can't believe that these termites steep that low to say that it was COVID. That's absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
Absolutely disgusting.
Well, anyways.
That's like saying guys that served in World War II die of lead poisoning.
It's just bad enough that we lose a great one, and especially at 75. I mean, 75 is
in today's standards is relatively young.
Yeah, it really is. So, condolences to his family, and like I said, if it wasn't for Tom Seaver, the Mets would not have owned New York City like they did for so many years.
His personality outside being ornery. I know several people that met Tom Seaver at different functions, and they had nothing but great things to say about him. He carried conversations. He was a kind of player, kind of a person that asked questions about you, not just you asked questions about him. So experiences that I've heard about, and nobody had anything but good things to say about Tom Seaver.
Well, he's going to be missed, and another great one. You folks that are supposed baseball fans now that never saw him pitch, Google it, and take a look at him, and you'll see that there's the greats all have something in common. The great pitchers in Major League Baseball all have something in common.
And the thing that people say is, are, well, the teams he pitched against weren't that good. The league wasn't as good. That's baloney. The league's watered down now.
Yeah.
Tom Seaver could pitch in the 60s, the 70s, 2020, 2040, and they're not going to crash him for home runs often like they do these players. He's going to go 8-9 innings every time out. For anybody to say anything about Tom Seaver as a pitcher, they're absolutely out of their minds.
Here's the thing that all the great ones have, the great pitchers have, and that and they own the plate. Today, the baseball, the batters own the plate for a lot of reasons. But back then, the Seavers, the Gibsons, even the Juan Marichals, any truly strong pitcher back then owned the plate. If you were gonna pop them for a home run, or if you were gonna hurt them, you had your work cut out for you.
Well, they didn't allow you to dig in.
Yeah.
These guys nowadays, they put a beach chair in the batter's box. That would never happen with the great pitchers.
Yeah. They all have that in common. They own the plate.
And the thing about them is, all the guys you mentioned, they could put any pitch anywhere consistently at any time.
Yeah.
No, nobody can say that in today's game.
When you go back to baseball, when there was 12 teams in each league, when there was only 20 some teams, the quality of play, the consistency of play, was truly amazing.
It had to be better because, like you said, there were less teams and there were more minor league teams.
Yep.
So the chances for you to get to the major leagues was fewer, and for you to get to the major leagues, you had to be pretty darn good.
And that's why here, when Steve Blass made it to the major leagues and pitched in the World Series and did so well, and he came out of Housatonic Valley Regional High School, it was an amazing thing because he did it in that time. He did it in that time.
I mean, not to make light of things, but just to get involved in pro ball back then was a lot harder than it is today.
Unbelievably harder. All right. With that being said, Tampa Bay beat the Yankees last night.
Crazy stuff. They banged them out early, and then when the Yankees came up in the bottom of the first inning, they stopped the game because of a drone flying over the field. I mean, what the heck is going on?
Well, it
is. A drone was flying over the field. The umpire stopped the game, pointed to the drone, waited till it went away, and then because there's no fans, you can hear what they're saying. The umpire said, "Do you guys want to wait or you want to start?" Then both managers said, "Let's go. Let's play."
You know, people in our society today are just crazy. That's because of all this social media stuff, flying drones over. You know, here's what people, and I've even said this about NFL coverage, and when they put these cameras on these huge cables above these stadiums, you know, sooner or later one of those cables is going to break.
One of those
300 pound cameras is going to fall.
Yep.
It just goes too far. You just go too far.
Yep. I mean, you have the helmet cam, you have all this stuff. Everybody wants to be on the field. Well, guess what? You can't be on the field because you can't play the game.
That's exactly right. Oh, well, anyways. All right, so there's that. Now, what else happened in sports?
The Avalanche won last night, so they forced the Game 7. They were down 3-1. They beat Dallas last night pretty handily, and that forces a Game 7. I think that game will be tomorrow night. I'm just waiting for this to come up. That'll be on Friday, Dallas at Colorado in a Game 7. Tonight, the Islanders hope not to get to a Game 7. They play tonight at 7 o'clock, looking to wrap that up. And then, again, following them will be the Vegas and Vancouver series at 9:45. So both Vegas and the Islanders look to close things out today, and hopefully the Islanders can, because if it goes to a Game 7, advantage Flyers. Once you blow a 3-1 lead, things are pretty tough.
All right, now we've got some racing to talk about today.
Yeah, our picket of the day today is going to be in the first race at Saratoga. Hopefully it will be on the turf. Yesterday everything came off everywhere, so that was a mess. But the first race today is a maiden $75,000 claimer going a mile and an eighth on the turf. Our plate for the radio is the five-horse Holy Emperor, trained by Jimmy Jerkins. This horse just missed by a nose going up at Saratoga August 1st in a maiden special weight. Drops down into claimers today, and I think the drop gets the job done. So our play is in the first race at Saratoga, the five-horse Holy Emperor. Now, for tomorrow, like we always do, we do the big races the day before because of the Derby's on Saturday. So we do the Friday races today. A couple races real quick for tomorrow at Churchill. The eighth race is the Grade 2 Eight Bells going 7 furlongs on the dirt. The one-horse Monday Call is going to be the big favorite coming off a track record performance at Ellis Park. But watch the number 5 horse, Sconson, who won a pretty big race at big odds, almost 20-1 at Churchill Downs back in June. So a 1-5-5-1 is the play in the Eight Bells. From there, we're going to go to, let's move quickly here, the 10th race, the Ali Sheba, a Grade 2, 1/16 for older horses. McKenzie's going to be a 6-5 favorite. In my opinion, McKenzie isn't McKenzie anymore. He's coming off a layoff since last July, and to jump into these deep waters is going to be pretty hard for him to win at a very low price. Two horses I'm looking at here, Owen Dell is going to be closing. If there's enough pace, he'll get there. It doesn't look like a lot of pace in the race, so you have to respect the one, Silver Dust, at 15-1 for Brett Calhoun from the rail. He's going to make the pace, and if he doesn't get pushed, he can walk around the track. So we're going to go to 1-3-3-1 in a 10th race, the Grade 2 Ali Sheba. From there is the La Troyenne, a Grade 1. This race is for older fillies. We're going to stop right with the 8 horse, Monomoy Girl. She was just superb. She's had a superb career, winning 11 out of 13 races. She got a little bit of a layoff for injury after the distaff. She's back now, rattled out 2 wins, 1 at Churchill, 1 at Belmont. She looks right. Her works are good. Nobody's going to beat Monomoy Girl in the La Troyenne. And then the big race for tomorrow is the Kentucky Oaks, a Grade 1. Swiss Skydiver's got the rail, got the speed. She's going to go as far as she can, as long as she can. The horse that's getting all the ink is the 5, Gamine, from Bobby Baffert. This horse has never been 2 turns. In my opinion, isn't bred to go 2 turns. He's going to get a ton of action in here, but I don't like this horse at all in this race tomorrow. Swiss Skydiver is going to be the speed, and I think the horse you got to watch to upset her is going to be the 4 horse, Speech. This horse is coming off a record-breaking performance in the Grade 1 Ashland at Keeneland on July 11th, and I think the difference between the 1 and the 4 is going to be the time off. Swiss Skydiver recently ran on August 15th, which was a little more than 2 weeks ago. Speech has a nice rest coming into this race. If Swiss Skydiver is a little bit short, I think Speech gets the job done. So in the Kentucky Oaks tomorrow, we're going to go with a 1-4-4-1 exacta, and we're going to throw out what will probably be the post-time favorite in the 4. And I'm sorry, in the 5 horse, Gamine. So the Derby weekend starts tomorrow at Churchill Downs.
All right, and we'll check in with you tomorrow.
I'll be here.
All right, Mike, take care.
Have a great day, guys.
Mike Causey with a check on sports this morning here on Robin Hood Radio. Once again, you can get his internet pick on the web at Robin Hood Radio Daily Bugle.com. Click on Causey's Corner.